Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure.
Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
mm. Yeah, I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Ooh, a fondue set. Ugh, now I need to find a coupon code.
Not anymore, Susan. Capital One Shopping instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout.
Wait, instantly?
It's called shopping smart, not hard. Download Capital One Shopping to your computer for free and let it do the work for you.
Don't mind if I fondue.
Haha, that's kind of cheesy. Capital One Shopping. It's kind of genius. What's in your wallet?
Savings and available coupons vary.
What's a bottom line? Returns at all costs? Cutting losses? Getting out fast? Not at Blackstone. At Blackstone, the bottom line is about the long haul. The bottom line says, see it through, even when it's tough. It's building better businesses, over and over and over again. Helping them transform and take their communities along with them. At Blackstone, the bottom line isn't just a line. The bottom line goes beyond returns.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure.
Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
mm. Yeah, I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure.
Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
mmm, yeah. I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Nope, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Mushami Robinson. She was a member of the 2004 United States Olympic track and field team. She won an Olympic gold medal as a member of the 4x400-meter relay team at the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece. And also, she was a four-year letter winner as a member of the University of Texas track and field team. We have her on the program to discuss her time at the University of Texas, her track and field career, and other things that she's working on. She's coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
.145/92 .180/111
.182/100 And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure looks like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
I can't button up a shirt. I can't run.
I've had to learn to swallow again.
That's the only movement that I have. And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
Had I done this, had I done that,
hell, I messed up.
Get back on your plan. Or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure. Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change. Like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
Yeah, I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Everyone loves shopping online. Well, I'm going to tell you what I tell my golf buddies when they buy clubs. Stop searching for coupon codes. Download Capital One Shopping to your computer. Capital One Shopping instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout. Plus, it's free, and you don't even need a Capital One card to use it. That's like hitting a hole in one without even trying. Capital One Shopping. It's kind of genius. What's in your wallet?
Savings and available coupons vary.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
No, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope. It's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
No, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Some people make a single cup of coffee, others an entire pot. At Community Coffee, we make ours with a commitment. Because community isn't just our name, it's our mission. Find us at your grocery store or communitycoffee.com to learn more.
Everybody, welcome back.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope. It's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
No, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
To the program. Now it's time to bring on the guest. She was a 4-year letter winner as a member of the University of Texas track and field team, and she was also won an Olympic gold medal as a member of the 4x400 meter relay team at the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece. We're going to talk to her about her athletic career and also what she's doing in the world of education and in the fight for social justice. Let's welcome her to the program, Mushami Robinson. Hello, Mushami. How's everything?
Hello, great evening, peace. How are you? Can you hear me well?
I can hear you loud and clear. Can you hear me loud and clear?
Yes, sir. Yes, I can. Thank you. That was beautiful. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to be on the program. So let's get right to it. You had an esteemed career in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas as a member of that track and field program. Not just Texas is really big on sports and football and track and field. They've really churned out a lot of talent throughout the years at that esteemed institution. Again, you were a 4-year letter winner from 2000 to 2003, and during your time there, I'm looking at it here, you won 12 conference titles. You were a 12-time All-American, and you also helped the Longhorns win the 4x400-meter relay national title 3 times. So you did a lot during your time at Austin. Just tell me, what was your experience like during your time with the Longhorns?
I appreciate that history, to hear that back. You know, you when you're living in it, you don't realize what all you kind of get accomplished. And, you know, to even conceptualize all that, it was an absolute amazing time to just even have an opportunity to go to an institution where I can receive a college education and do a sport I love. So just being grateful for that opportunity, you know, going down to the University of Texas in an institution where the women's program was separate from the men. So, you know, they really took care of, you know, all of the athletes, particularly that our program was separated. So, you know, being that I had the support of an institution like, you know, the University of Texas and you know, the academics were one of the things that were most important to me. You know, it really set a good foundation. You know, the level of excellence that was expected, you rose to the occasion. So I think a lot of what I was able to do had to do with the people that I surrounded myself with at the institution, those that supported, even through the trials and tribulations of what athletes just go through being on the team. So I give a lot of credit to the University of Texas Athletic Department, the university itself, the growth that Texas is, and everything that, you know, it says what happens there changes the world. And, you know, when I chose to go there, I just felt warm on my visit. I knew it was a place that I can grow. And so I was just blessed to be able to give back and share my gifts with the university once I, you know, joined. So that was a great thing for me.
We're going to touch more on your educational pursuits in just one moment. I want to stay a little bit more on the athletic side. Again, I mentioned that UT, the track and field program, has really been esteemed for a long time. During your time with the Longhorns, one of your teammates was Sonya Richards-Ross. Just kind of tell me some of the things that you picked up from her during your time when you guys were teammates and during your time in Austin.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. You're one of few people who've really asked about my relationship with Sonya, and I know her, Sonya. I've always called her that. She was like a little sister. She was a freshman when I was a senior there. And so it was a very interesting dynamic to see such a young talent, me coming from Ohio and to see her coming from Florida into a space ready to be excellent. Like, that was exciting for me. And so, you know, one thing that was so great about our relationship, and even today, we're very close. And, you know, what I love about her is she came in respecting what had been done before her. And so when we trained together. And I just remember when we got to Paris and we both made the world championship team, it was in a time prior to the world championship team, I hurt myself during Penn Relays, before Penn Relays. And so, you know, it came down to whether or not I was going to be a part of one of the relays. And Sonya and Raisin came and asked me if I would join them. And they knew that they would be the only people I would show up for. And I just thought that, you know, the way our relationship grew and the level of respect that she showed to all of us and the training and the way iron sharpens iron, people will never know what those training days were like. People will never know what those locker room conversations were. But the beauty of relationship and what happens on a collegiate athletic team of any kind is definitely something very powerful. And so, you know, to see the growth of all of our careers, you know, after Texas and all the wonderful things that she's doing now, you know, I'm always sending her a thumbs up. You know, she's always letting me know and reminding me, you know, what I was to her. So, you know, that's something personal and private that I've always respected about her. And, you know, I honor her for how she respected the space that she came into. So it was actually a fantastic relationship.
Indeed it is. You know, you said it best, iron sharpens iron. You know, when you're among the best, you have to compete with the best, and it definitely brings the competition, definitely brings the best out of all of us. And definitely, you know, thank you for sharing that with during your time at UT with Sonya. So you transitioned nicely into your professional athletic career, but I want to ask you, as far as your educational background, where did you earn your degrees in at University of Texas?
So, you know, it's cool that you asked that, because when I think about all that you said I accomplished there, you know, that was the way I thought about the education I was going to receive. So, you know, I set out on a journey to do international business. I thought I wanted to do international stockbroking, because I'd done an internship with Merrill Lynch, you know, all while I was in high school. So I was all about money, making it quick, and I thought that was cool. I guess that's why I love running track. I'm like, I can control my entire destiny with my feet. That's amazing. And so what I decided after my freshman year, that probably first semester, and I realized the demands of track and field, my counselor, Tina Klein, she really had a conversation with me about having this opportunity to go in the direction that I wanted to and what I really thought I wanted to do with my platform, with track and field, with life, what I thought I was good at. And so I led into corporate communication and psychology. What we discovered my sophomore year is that it was going to take me about 20 credit hours more than the rest of the entire team to complete both of the degrees, because it would require a dual degree program. And so, you know, we had a real conversation about what that looked like, and that I admittedly would be taking, you know, 18 hours, you know, some semesters. I just had to commit to not do it during the racing season. And so that's what I set out on, and that's what I accomplished. So I was able to get 2 degrees in 4.5 years and 2 full degrees. So I had to graduate with 144 hours. It's amazing what 3 more hours adds up to. But I have a degree in corporate communication and a degree in psychology with a concentration in child and reasoning and thinking. So I was able to milk the cow too, I guess. I was going to go for the
Yeah, you did. You did. Congratulations to you on earning those degrees right there. What did you further? Have you furthered your education? Have you earned continued in post-secondary education, earning a master's or a PhD, or not yet? Or are you planning to do that in the future?
I'm glad that you asked that. So I just through the USOPC, the United States Olympic Program, I'm taking advantage of the DeBrye Keller business, and I just started my master's program for master's in business with a concentration in entrepreneurship. But prior to that, no, I had not. And, you know, I raced professionally for about 15 years up until about 2017 and 2016. And when I went into the education space, the one thing I've really come to know is I appreciate everything that I was able to learn in college. And when you go to college, you know, you don't just learn the subject matter or the content that you decide to study. You know, you really grow in life in that space. And what I've learned in a decade of teaching is that experience, and in those 15 years of racing all over the world, is that experience is priceless. You know, I would be the person to say that, you know, when I start a company, I'm going to really take a look at the person who has experience in a space, you know, that have organically dealt with the human being in a space that, you know, I want to dive into or that I'm thinking about, because that really matters. And I think there's not enough credit given to when people have experiences. So I'm just blessed to be able to have taken these undergraduate degrees in the subject matter that I did, combined them with the perspective I was able to gain in my different space of professional track and field, now teaching in the 8th largest school district in the nation, and to be able to bring that together to say, hey, I have a nonprofit that I'm going to be building, and here's where my level of focus is. So it's not just about really another piece of paper, but really in a direction that's concentrated in how I can serve God's people and us in the world better.
Rightfully so. That's a wonderful explanation that you had given. Thank you so much. I want to stay with your education, the degrees, your undergraduate degrees that you earned at Texas. And again, it's with corporate communications and psychology. We know that sports is not just a physical thing, but more than anything, it's a mental thing. You can be prepared and you can come in physically, or you can have the best body and be the fastest, and you can have all your ducks in a row. But man, the human mind is really a fascinating thing. As the song by the Ghetto Boys, your mind can really play tricks on you. Did your psychology degree really help you in the you study in the field of psychology? Did it help you in your collegiate career and take it into your professional track and field career?
You know, that's an interesting question, in that you have those two separate time frames. At the time that I was learning it, my entire scope in being on the Texas women's track program was just about being excellent, right, and how I can just be the best. So it was about getting that corporate communications degree, getting my psychology degree, being the best I could in the classroom, and just being the best on the track and trying to manage all that. And so I don't know if I was necessarily applying the content I was learning so much at the time as I was building the relationships that I was learning that was important through those two subjects. That's probably the best I can say about the collegiate space. But as I definitely, you know, grew professionally, I was able to use the two together more than I thought I would, you know, in learning the right things to communicate about, but also the timing and the delivery. You know, the corporate communication taught me the things to be speaking about, you know, the level of focus, how to scope the conversation. And the psychology teaches you, how do you relate to individuals? You know, how can you be in that intrinsic space and be heard, thinking about the mind, thinking about all of our differences and being accepting in that space and understanding that we are all different, and to appreciate that and knowing that the brain is neuroplastic and it can always grow and change.
All right, fair enough. So now let's transition on to your athletic career. You definitely had an esteemed career. You competed in a lot of races. One thing I want to first and foremost, the Olympics. You, congratulations, you won an Olympic gold medal as a member of the 4x400-meter relay team at the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens, Greece. I've had several Olympic track and field athletes on my program, and one you're going to know very well, Lauren Williams. I've had her on my show a couple of times, and I asked her this question, and I'll ask you this question. I've always the Olympics is like a global party. It's like the whole world is watching. What is it like when you get on that track and you are running and knowing that the whole world is like watching you and the best athletes out there in the world performing and doing their thing?
Yeah, this is exactly how I describe this moment. As I'm waiting on the baton and we're in lane one, and I was the second leg in the prelim round, you know, and it's one thing when I walked out there to take my spot, you know, I can see everything. I can see every detail. Yes, my heart was pounding. The energy is strong. But one thing is for certain, being in a USA uniform, you know that you win. You're only out there to win. So that was understood, and that's at any time. So you already come to the space prepare to be excellent and to take on the win. So I just remember as I'm waiting on the baton, when she does give it to me, you know, for everything I thought I might experience, all I remember seeing, because there were so many cameras and so many people, is just a white oval of light, because that's how many cameras were flashing. I didn't see any figures anymore once I took the baton. And, you know, people say, oh, you were running that fast. I'm like, maybe so, but that's what I saw. And I remember everyone was screaming USA so very loud that the only thing I could hear is my breathing. And I try to describe it to people like when you're in a loud concert and you can only hear yourself because it's so loud. That's exactly the sound, and that was all I saw until I passed the baton off to Monique Henderson, and that's when I could see images again. And that moment was such pandemonium. That was, you know, a beautiful experience that I can't even think I would have had, and I just am so grateful. But that's exactly what that was like.
Yeah, let's stay with your teammates for a moment during that year in Athens. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Monique Henderson and also your other teammates, DeeDee Trotter. Of course, you reunited with your teammate at Texas, Sonya Richards-Ross, and, of course, Monique Hennigan. Any moments or any memories that you have during that Olympic experience with your teammates?
Even that 2000 leading up into the trials, once you make the team, is you're built. I think with USA Track and Field, we are such a connected family, and we all set out when we go to trials, we all set out to know what we're trying to do, and it's a world team, an Olympic team, a Pan Am team. And 2004 was very special. You know, we were returning back to the 100th anniversary where it began, and that was a unique team of legends and a unique team of new babies. You know, Allison Felix was on that team. Jeremiah Pop, we had everyone on that team. And we understood what we were all there to do. And so Monique Hennigan, who stepped up and had a great showing at trials, and then Sanya, you know, being young and a sophomore year in college coming out, and me representing Texas straight out of college, and, you know, Monique Henderson representing UCLA and a fabulous of institution that was. And then we had DeeDee. It's like we had the cream of the crop, young, we had old, we had veteran, we had new and coming in. And as a team collectively, you know, with the training and even everybody who was staying ready to be in weight to prep, the beauty of knowing what we're all there to do and put those uniforms on is it's like a sisterhood and a family that when you experience it, if you've ever been a part of sports, a part of a team, you know, people know what that feels like. And even you don't even have to be a part of a sport. When you're with a group of people and you set a goal to obtain and you know what everyone's role is and you're checking in and you're committed to each other and you know you'll pick up the slack and you're having honest conversation, you know, some beautiful things can happen. And that's exactly what happened in Athens. And that's the relationship that we all built with each other while you're out there, you know, miles away, taking care of each other, you know, in the village, you know, traveling, you know, 40 or so minutes away on the bus and, you know, seeing different things and just being well taken care of by Team USA. So it was it's a beautiful experience in the relationship that we build when you're going through something like an Olympic experience, particularly on a relay team.
Yeah, it looked like a wonderful experience. And as you mentioned, that was the 100th anniversary of the Olympics in Athens. So definitely it looked like a very special occasion. And I know in track and field in the United States is a special occasion, but it's extremely special when in other countries like Jamaica, the Bahamas, England, or I'm sorry, Great Britain, and, you know, Australia. And we know it's no secret that the United States have had a rivalry for a long time with Jamaica and the Bahamas. Was there any type of jaw-jacking going on during that period of time, during your time when you were in Athens for the 04 Olympics?
I think it's really cool that, you know, a lot of us, because of the NCAA system and track and field, which is, you know, the NCAA system is an amazing space of development for the sport of track and field in the Olympic space. And that's a grateful space. So, you know, a lot of us are in school with one another, and then we go and we make our teams as we get older professionally. And so you take that same energy. You know, we didn't all have on the same uniforms in college. And then even those of us that did have on the same uniforms that made their team, you know, there's something about patriotism. And, you know, some things can go unsaid. You know, there's always a look, particularly with women athletes I love. You know, there can be a lot not said with a look, right? And so, yeah, jaw-jacking looks a little different with movement, with the warm-up, you know, how you move in the warm-up space when all of the first leg is in the same space with spikes on warming up, you know, your stance. So, yeah, it's a lot of that energy. But it, like I said, you know, iron sharpens iron, and it really makes you know that you got to come out here and perform. It's not about not being ready. You know, if you're not, tell someone because it's go time. And one thing we did know, particularly during the time I ran on Team USA, and Jamaica respected and we respected them, but we were going for the win, and we were going to win. And I believe the time that we lost to the Americas team at the World Cup, and it was back in Athens, Greece in 2006, you know, we had a real conversation. Sonia had doubled in a 200, and it was a lot on her legs to run the 4x4. And whether or not she had been on the 4x4, I think collectively as a team, you know, I think that was the first time we as America saw all of the islands come together and make a real all-star team. And we're like, okay. And, you know, from that point on, you know, we really kind of honed in on what that 4x4 is, particularly for Team USA always. And that, you know, when we go out there to end the meet, we need to be signing, sealing it, delivering it. And if we can deliver it with a record, let's do that. So, you know, that energy, I think, has continued on setting that in place.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching track and field for so long, man. It's just like it's always the United States. It's always Jamaica. It's always the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. And then you can also put Great Britain in there and Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, our neighbors to the north, Canada, they've produced a lot of great talent for quite some time. So let's stay with the Olympic experience for a moment. I've asked a couple of athletes this. You can comment on this if you want to or not. But what's the environment and the atmosphere like in the Olympic Village?
It's unique, and I think I can definitely say each games probably has its own. The U.S. team at that particular time went soon after 2003. You know, we had just, I think, went into conflict with Iraq. So we were very heavily guarded. And where they had the U.S. team sit, we were kind of off in our own, like, little nook, guarded by our military. So no one was allowed to come back into our space. We had to come out to visit with people, which was unique. But the village itself has everything. You know, it has a barbershop, a salon, a dance hall, a dentistry. It's a town of every single country, of every single human being that's great at their sport. And, you know, that's a unique space we don't always find ourselves in either. So it's electrifying to be around so many different people, and it's not just track, right? It's every single sport in the summer games. So, yeah, it's an experience that you have to have, an experience that is like no other.
It sounds like a global Mardi Gras. In other words, when you said it was a dance hall and a barbershop and beauty salon, I mean, it definitely sounds like it was a global party, like you said, an experience unlike any other. Let's stay with the village for a moment. I won't name any names, but there is a corporate sponsor that has dealt with the Olympic Games for a long time, and they specialize in food, and they're worldwide. They're not just nationwide, they're worldwide. And I wanted to know, did you partake in this restaurant's delicacies during your time at the Village, or did they have many dining options available?
So I was going to say about the dining, right? The beauty of the Village is that we get to experience everyone's and all the global eateries. So personal choice and making good choices is important that you teach your athletes, because it is definitely something when you have these delectable options. So I can say that I was very strict about my diet. I was strict about what I was there to do. And so because I had choices, I was able to eat the proper things. But I can tell you, when I was done, I indulged, and it was open 24 hours all the time. I probably ate more potatoes and patties ever before. I wouldn't do that now because I'm vegan, but at the time, yes, I fully indulged as soon as I was done racing, all in. And so were a lot of others during the time, after the time, before the time, to not tell on anyone.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, you definitely made the most out of your time in the Village, and definitely it's an experience unlike any other. So also, not only did you win an Olympic gold medal, you also placed gold as well in the 2003 Pan American Games as a member of the women's 4x400-meter relay team. You reunited with your Olympic teammate, Dede Trotter. You also added some other names to this list, Julian Clay, and also a lady that I had on a previous show, Melissa Barber, I beg your pardon. Just tell me a little bit of what that experience was like in Santo Domingo.
Well, you know, that was one of my first times really in a Caribbean or tropical area or experience, and only made me my second one with Team USA out of the country prior to the World Games in Paris. The only other time was the World University Games in China. So to speak to those young ladies that you just spoke of, we saw ourselves together in China when we made the World University Games team in 2001. So it was unique for us to see each other again, older, 2 years later on the Pan Am team. And man, a beautiful place, you know, to be out of college, having come from the University of Texas, being in the United States, but to be able to travel and early on in life, see other cultures, other people, learn to respect space and laws, learn about the real saying, win in Rome, you know, do as the Romans do, and, you know, to experience culture and taste different foods. I'll say this. This is the one takeaway that we always talk about, even to this day, about Santo Domingo. We ate mangoes. I've never had mangoes that tasted the way they tasted, and that taste, they're the best. And for probably 2 or 3 days, that was all I consumed, because I never tasted a mango that tasted so great. So I had it for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I didn't even want anything else. And so, you know, it was cool to just even have that cultural experience. And then to, you know, do it with young ladies that you traveled out of the country with already, that was something that I don't take for granted. You know, it made it a little more comfortable to move around in the city, to, you know, want to explore, to just feel, you know, able to experience more, feeling safe in numbers with people who you've already traveled outside the country, who know how to respect space, that, you know, respect culture. It makes it really awesome.
Indeed, sounded like an awesome experience. I want to stay with Santo Domingo, and of course, the Olympic experience you had in Athens. Can you kind of give me the differences between those two cities?
So Pan Am, you know, Santo Domingo, very intimate, smaller island. Cultural focus is different in terms of eating times, just the focus on timing, you know, completely different part of the, you know, hemisphere, but a very intimate space. And then, you know, the Pan Am Games are a different set of people or athletes in who we're representing. So you're getting a different type of culture altogether in terms of that part of the globe, whereas the Olympic Spirits, you're getting the entire globe. So there's a level of intimacy and connectivity that's a little different when you get into the Pan American Games space. That's different from the Olympic global space. That's really unique and special. The group of people and athletes that compete in the Pan Am Games, it's an experience that, you know, I can say, yeah, I think the best word I can say is a little more intimate in terms of culture and the way you experience it and the, how you see it. And then when you get on the global space, you see so many more differently and same or maybe drastically different, but you can definitely, you get an opportunity to make a life comparison in a competition space of what that's like. So, you know, where there are some who don't get to experience that Pan Am game space.
Okay, sweet. Let's stay with track and field for a moment. You know, the, one of the benefits that you mentioned about your track and field career is the traveling and being with your teammates and sharing those wonderful experiences. But from the one of the few things that I've talked to a lot of track and field athletes about is pay and salaries and finishes and getting endorsements and things of that nature. There's so many athletes that compete, but there's only so few endorsements. How were you able to, you know, make a living at that time as a professional track and field athlete? Were you, did you supplement your income with working another job? Did you have endorsements or maybe speaking engagements? How were you, how did you do it?
Well, for me coming out of college, you know, right out of college, knowing that I wanted to continue on racing and I was going to, you know, my parents, what they did is they were the real reason that I received an Olympic gold medal for Team USA, because it was Linda and Harold Bozeman that said that they would pay my rent from the time I decided to go to North Carolina and train with Dan Pass to the time that I was there and became a pro athlete before my contract. And they paid my rent up until the Olympic Games, because after the Games, you know, that's when, you know, endorsements came in. So I have to first credit my parents' support. And that $650 was everything, because I figured the rest out. You know, I don't even, you know, quite recall. I know from college, I already had a mindset of the things that I wanted to do. So, let's just say I already had a little savings. And then when I got to North Carolina, graduation money, things that I set aside and really poured into my training. And gratefully, I had a good support system. So I wasn't paying for a whole lot in terms of coaching fees and things like that. So, you know, the sacrifices, a lot of sacrifices were made there. And once I won gold medal, you know, we get our grant, the money that we received from the Olympic Games, which, you know, make no mistake, it's not anything that, you know, you don't really necessarily run home and tell anybody about it. But what I did do is I took my money, the earnings from there. I paid any debt that I had from college, and I gave both my parents $2,500 apiece for them to spend how they wanted. And then I set up from the rest. And then shortly after, you know, I received a Nike contract and started with an agent. However, that is a very unique space, and you do need to have a contract. And I was able to supplement the money I made with my contract with the actual money I made on the track, and having have a medal, you know, I had agents who can ask for appearance fees. So I'm able to ask for appearance fees, make the money from actually the competition itself, as well as couple it with the money I have for a shoe contract. You know, I think there's a misconception in people believing that everyone gets, you know, the six-figure salary. And I was the athlete that, you know, was always fourth, not making six figures, you know, only making five. And, you know, I would always wonder and think about how could it be different. And, yes, you know, athletes that have to work or supplement, it's going to be difficult. And they still make it amazingly. You know, people would never know that the very athletes that you watch win gold medals or, you know, at the Olympic Games just left, you know, maybe having an eviction put on their home. And I think that's what's important that, you know we're going to talk about that later, but I think that's why I really – you know, focused on have athletes having a voice, because when we look at the revenue, it's not always there. And I know athletes do it for the love, but, you know, for everything that an athlete brings to the table and to the brands and to the sponsors and who we are as people, you know, I think there's a little more revenue, a lot more revenue, let me be honest, can really be poured into what I call our ministry, you know, and our gifts that we've been blessed with as human beings. And we'll see even greater out of each and every one of us. So I think that's why I got into more of advocacy. So I'm glad that you're asking that question, because it is definitely different. It's not what people think all the time.
Yeah, and definitely, indeed, it is different. I think people should be rewarded for their hard work. It has to be an equal playing field. And, you know, it has to be, you know, okay, you being an athlete and you bring a lot of things to the table, and you should be compensated for that. I think you should have the right to be paid and to be compensated properly for the what you bring to the table. You know, it's a give and take type of situation. You exchange your time, and your talents for money, and you definitely earn that. You should be paid for that. I want to stay with just endorsements and just how the pay scale works in track and field. Again, I don't want to get too in your business or anything like that. I know there's the big races in the States. Like there's Penn Relays, there's the Prefontaines, there's the Olympic Trials, and Drake Relays, and there's some other big races as well. But I know overseas track and field is just it's prime real estate over there. I want to ask you, do you prefer racing overseas or do you prefer racing in the States in terms of a financial from a financial standpoint?
I know that, one, we should definitely have a professional circuit for track and field in the United States of America. We should have to make a living in the sport of track and field. No American athlete should have to go to race in Europe if they don't want to make a substantial living to be able to sustain a household, a family for what they want. Because we have the resources, we have the sponsorship, and we definitely have the market and the athletes. I think, you know, athletes go where they have to make the money, and we should really be more expansive. And I think that, you know, USA Track and Field is, you know, has been working hard to get into that space. I just know for me and for my sport, it's been a long time coming. You know, I've said for years, we've all raced, we've all run. Everybody had field day in fourth grade. Like everybody gets that field day. Everybody does like the broad jump with the rope, you know? So it's something that we can all sit down on a Saturday, you know, from March to June and just in America, watch amazing athletes race that we've seen in the NCAA space, you know? So now our kids have things to aspire to. You know, you see the kid that was in your running high school track at your state meet in New Jersey or Florida or, you know, Wyoming. And now you see that same child or same young person or same adult at Olympic trials or trials, and now you see it on TV and you see professionalism and you see teams that represent different states of athletes who are racing for the country. And, you know, that's what they're sharpening themselves for. So, you know, I think that that's a market that's needed. The one thing we do know is that the track and field athlete that represents USA, whether you're a thrower, a jumper, a distance athlete, a sprinter, a hurdler, is definitely someone who represents a unique, diverse space. And when we come together and represent Team USA, we represent well and the best we can. And I think that, you know, it definitely the sport of track and field in the athletes I've seen for over, man, since 2001, so we're going on 18 years where there can be more revenue poured into a space that has given so much to the Olympic movement in totality, particularly for the USA track and field athlete. So I'm looking forward to, you know, that space opening up differently, particularly as we bring sport back differently and how we can look at racing on the virtual space and in person. So it's time for that.
Thank you for explaining that. I want to, if someone came to you and said, I would love to be a professional track and field athlete, what would your advice be to someone that would like to be in the sport and to do it professionally?
So with the way our sport and the way track and field has been set up and with the way international space, which is why there's so many athletes working hard to have athlete voice, you know, there would have been a time where I would have said, hey, you know what, you go get your coach, you go train, you know, you show up at these meets, you run this time, and there you go. Maybe not so much now, you know. Yes, definitely be prepared to train, but there are marks and times that you definitely need to be prepared to hit. And when it comes to making the Olympic team, there's a world ranking system that has been set up that doesn't necessarily bode well for the U.S. athlete because they're in the point system. We don't have as many opportunities to race in the United States. And again, there are people that are growing the space in USA Track and Field and working hard to get in that space. So what I would tell someone now is that if they're wanting to make a team, and definitely if they were wanting to make an Olympic team, particularly the one that has been postponed till this year, your training is started yesterday, right? And be serious about it, because the way you would make it now is you need to be top three and you need to make the qualifying time. But you need to make the qualifying time in order to get into the trial. So there's like a two-step process. You got to get to have races that are sanctioned. So they need to be sanctioned under USA Track and Field, meaning if you go race at that race, you can accept it, and it can be accepted at the USA Track and Field time. And once you get that qualifying mark, you sign up, and the field size is going to fill up. So if they're only taking 32 men for the 100 meters, let your time be in that top 32, and there you go. And then race to the top. I mean, it's there for you to do. I don't want any – people don't have to think that you have to have a sponsor, because let me say, my parents sacrificed the money, and my body did the rest. My sponsors didn't come until a year and a half after the medal. And so I just want, you know, anyone to know that it is possible. But understand there are times to focus on, and there's some critical things that you just have to make those marks to do, and it can be done. You know, they're fast times, but it can be done. You know, they're high marks, but it can be done. And if that's something that anyone wants to go do, be serious about it. Get online, see where races are, see where sanctioned meets are, know when trials is, have your money ready, sign up, go get your times, and show up and be prepared. So I'm glad that you asked, because it is possible. But just know it's not something that you can just walk into and say, hey, I just want to do this. There's a work and a commitment and a discipline and research. So you do find yourself at the right meet to be able to qualify and have your time stand and represent yourself.
Awesome. Thank you for explaining that and being detailed about that. You mentioned about the Olympics being postponed until this current year right here, Tokyo. Still a lot of questions about what's going to go on with Tokyo, but as of now, the Olympics are still planning to be held. You planning on trying to make a spot on the team?
I'm glad you asked. So I'm currently working on and have come back to train. In 2017, I'm working on building a nonprofit, and the reason I'm coming back to race and racing for another gold is for this particular reason. I taught high school, and in 2017, I had a student who committed suicide during the hurricane here in Florida. And as a high school teacher, what I do know at the time as a high school teacher, a lot of students were going through so many different things. And I created a space in my classroom where the students can come in, and I let them talk about anything they wanted, and nothing was off limits. And I gave it a name. And so after my student, after Jasmine passed, my students came to me and asked if I would make that a club for the entire school. And at the time when I asked the principal, they didn't allow me to. They said it was a lot of liability. I said, you know, I'm willing to take it. I've taken it on for 7.5 years in my classroom in terms of our young people and giving them a space to feel safe in. So prior to burying her, what I decided, I was sitting in my living room and I was watching Shark Tank, to be honest with you. And I really was torn about not being able to bring this club and this space to more students. And the universe spoke to me, and I said, how can I make this nationwide and put it in every school district, because they need it? And he said, you know, get a mic in your face again. I said, well, how can I get a mic in my face again? He said, run again. And I'm like, okay. And then he said, win again. And so, you know, I had some very clear instructions, and I have been transitioning and coming back and training and rebuilding completely vegan diet for that reason. And so I'm preparing to be there. I'm preparing to show up at trials, make the team. And I strongly believe they're going to do everything they need to do to have it ready, particularly being in Tokyo and Japan, having the time to postpone and really take a look at things and allowing, you know, finding out what's safe, you know, sports continuing on and being able to watch other sports and how things are done and have examples. I think that they're really going to bring that to fruition, because I think it's something, honestly, the world needs to see. And I think it can be done, and we can do it safely.
Yeah, it could be done too. I mean, I think they're going to have to implement a bubble like atmosphere, mm-hmm. with the NBA the previous year. I think that would be perfect. I mean, of course, things have currently changed. Nothing is open right now, so it would be different from Olympic years. But nevertheless, it's great that you still have your career, and you've gotten back to, you know, resuming your track and field career after that tragic loss that happened to one of your students right there. But you mentioned students and education. That's what I want to get into next. The field of education is something that you're passionate about. Correct me if I'm wrong. You earned a you were a double degree in corporate communications and psychology, and what your mm-hmm. concentration was in child. What was it again?
Child psych, as well as reasoning, thinking and reasoning.
Okay, thank you. Child psych, as well as reasoning and thinking. Now you've taught mm-hmm. elementary. And you've taught high school as well. How does those concentrations fall into the mix in what you do as a teacher?
Well, when I came into teaching, I started out as a substitute, and I thought, you know, I'm not going to always have people wanting my autograph when I get off a plane. That's not going to happen here in America. So as I got to the latter part of my career, I thought about what can I do in my life that can give me, ease me back into being a quote-unquote, what they call a regular life, or not being an athlete, but keep me grounded and keep me safe, you know, and kids are safe. So I'm like, you know, I don't think I was ready to tackle the world just yet. And so I found myself substitute teaching and falling in love with teaching. And an opportunity came to teach at the high school, and I created a yoga program for Orange County Public Schools that's now still here in the state of Florida that any school, any high school can pick up, and now middle schools and elementary schools also teach parts of the yoga program. And so that's what I taught for high school. And, you know, what I learned and took from my degrees, because how I became a teacher, I really just took the test and got the certificates. But I think the degrees have helped me understand, particularly, again, how to communicate, the timing in my delivery, no matter the age group, and to be around young people, to know that communication is so important, and to have space that young people felt comfortable communicating. The one thing I learned from our children is that, you know, we have to make a safe environment for our children to come talk to us as parents, as family members, so they will talk to us and be honest and not feel judged or afraid or feel that they're going to be attacked by asking a question, because many of them just have a question, don't think about, but are curious about the things that they're seeing. And, you know, I think we take for granted a lot of times with our children and with young people that they are experiencing life in their space, and that is their whole world. And we have to sometimes slow down, not sometimes slow down. We definitely need to slow down and tap into our children and give them that time to really respond to things that are going on and ask honest questions and, you know, be reflective with them. As opposed to be judgmental or hold a space for judgment while we, you know, figure out what our kids need from us. And so I was able to bring that into the classroom, which allowed me to provide that space on Fridays where the kids can talk about anything they want to do and get things off their chest before we went into the weekend.
Wow, that's very deep right there. I want to kind of just continue on the field of education. My parents are a big influence in my life, but I think teachers really outside of the family, outside of the immediate household, really are the true heroes, because teachers really provide that space, that wonderful space, and they provide that comfort and that sense of security. That's why ever since I was very, very small, I've just been such an advocate for teachers and the power of education. What are some of the benefits that you get from being an educator? Because I know we know that sometimes educators get a bad rap, that education is the salaries are not the best, but the good teachers, the great teachers out there that are really making a difference in the lives of the young ones. What are the benefits that you get from being an educator?
At this point, because when you're right, let me speak on the salaries. And I, because I have a platform and I decided to be a teacher, and I've been doing it now for 10 years, as teachers definitely need to be paid like everyone in the federal government. Every politician, every U.S. rep and senator, a teacher should get those salaries. And as an educator, I say that for this reason right here. What I now am blessed to be an educator and do is to know that I can change the world by the seeds I plant in these young children, in these young people. So that's what I get now. But what I do know is that education is so underappreciated in our country, in terms of how it affects what we see in the world. We all came through school. And what I just had a conversation about earlier today on a Zoom call is that what I know is those of us who were able to be successful or overcome or stay a little motivated, we had a teacher that believed in us at some point. We had an educator, because we spend half of our life from age 5 to 18 in an educational space. And so when we don't put the credit there and put focus there and appreciate there and help there and, you know, connect in that education space, a lot is missed. And to be honest with you, when we look at the world around us, I'm going to tell you, when I turned on my television on Wednesday, the first thing that came to my mind, because every day I wake up at the moment, I currently teach 15 third graders online, and it's a beautiful thing. And I tell them we were having a third grade business meeting. They're the third grade CEOs. I'm just their expert consultant. That's the best. That's how we started our space, right? And so when I got off the line and saw what was happening, I thought to myself, who did not give them a proper education? And it wasn't about the content. It was about the connectivity. What teacher felt them? Because when you plant seeds of connectivity, seeds of love, seeds of understanding in the content, seeds of acceptance, how do you connect with one another? How do you have this student respond to this content? And if it triggers something, you have an honest conversation about it. How do you get kids to have conflict resolution without being violent? How do you teach nonviolent communication? You know, how do you teach accountability and ownership? Those are things that we learn in the education space. And I think that if we work hard to, one, put it back in, we're going to get more out of it. But when you talk about, you ask me as an educator, coming from being a professional athlete, loving our young people, knowing that they truly are our future, definitely show appreciation monetarily to people who wake up every day and pour love and understanding into our children. Definitely weed out those who should not be there. And I believe that in any space of service, no matter what it's in, whether it's in the police department, whether it's in education, whether it's in fire department, people who are not serving the public in public service properly should all be removed. And we really have to pour into those spaces financially as well as socially, emotionally, so we can see better in the world. And until we do that, it is going to be hard to, you know, get each other to understand one another if we're not being taught that early on. Well, we're kind of forced to before we get to turn 18 and say, hey, I'm just going to do this because I can now.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's nothing like, you know, positivity in the world. We definitely need it, definitely need it right now. And definitely a great job you're doing as being an educator and shaping the young minds of America. And speaking of America and the world, what we've gone through recently has just been really a dumpster fire with social injustices with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor and Jacob Blake, and all the stuff that's going on in the Capitol has just really been so insane. We're divided in our world, you know, from racially, politically, socially, financially. We're just, there's really been a big schism in our world right now. And then politically, it's just been really terrible. You've really been at the forefront in terms of calling upon and making a voice for racial and social injustices during and for future Olympic and Paralympic Games. I mean, just kind of tell the listeners out there, you can tell, and tell me, just kind of like what your stance in, on all of this right now. We've seen, we saw what's happened in Olympic Games, of course, with Mexico City in 68, and everything is really coming back around full circle. And we've seen it as recent. It's been brutal. It's been horrible. We've never really been united. We continue to be divided in so many different ways. So what's your platform in terms of addressing racial and social injustices?
Well, I believe that, one, sports unites. And when there is division, where can we go to a space where there's unity? And sports has the opportunity to do that. And that's one of the reasons why I definitely wanted to take charge and, you know, do and show up in a space where I could. But prior to that, when it came to the Olympic Games, you know, having my college degrees and reading the rule 50, you know, I couldn't sit in a position of leadership at the United States Olympic Committee on the Athlete Advisory Council and not take up that language that USA Track and Field athletes, Gwen Berry, have been punished about you know, putting her fist up and knowing that that's something that she felt in her spirit that offends no one. It's a form of unity and a symbol of that. But to know that, you know, the rule in itself isolated U.S. athletes by saying that we couldn't kneel or athletes couldn't kneel or saying athletes couldn't put a fist up. And, you know, my biggest thing is out of the 206 nations that compete in a global market, the Olympic and Paralympics, they chose to isolate one nation's gesture of peace to bring awareness to racial injustices. And I just felt that that was egregious. And I felt it pointed out the black U.S. athlete for no reason. Athletes that bring amazing branding to the market, performance, evolution. Think about all the athletes that have represented Team USA in the space of track and field and Team USA in and of itself and what we've brought to the games. And I just thought, you know, if they didn't do that for all the other 205 countries and find out what their gestures were for racial injustices and include those, then you can't isolate ours. And it just kind of led into a larger conversation because that conversation was had before what we witnessed with Mr. Floyd's life. And when that did happen, it sparked a group of U.S. athletes, Paralympic, Olympic athletes. And for me, it was just a beautiful space because they did not look like me. And we all got on a document and we were all talking about if we started on a conversation, then we made a document talking to each other and on a Google Drive, just talking about what we couldn't have and what we couldn't tolerate and what we as a team needed to respond and say. And then Team USA heard us talking about it. And, you know, I just thought it was a fine time that we as athletes really speak on, you know, the fact that when we think about the global market and the Olympic Games and the Paralympic Games, we come there. We don't get millions of dollars to show up. When we win those gold medals, I didn't become a millionaire at all, you know. And because we're not begging for dollars, how do you muzzle a voice? And no one's even speaking. You know, we have to allow, if the Olympic space and Paralympic space is about unity, about this Olympic spirit and bringing people together in the human spirit, then human rights and civil liberties and respecting that is important. And if athletes want to bring awareness by showing a demonstration or not speaking and being in a peaceful space of awareness and show that there's a matter that the world needs to maybe take a look at, or we just need our own people to hear. There's nothing wrong with that because it harms no one. You know, only those who are offended are those who are the persecutors. And, you know, you have to give a voice where people have been marginalized for so long, and now is the time for that. And I think that I'm proud of Team USA, and I think what we saw kind of sparked from conversation. You know, we were able to be heard differently. You know, we all witnessed and saw what we saw, and then we all, again, recently have seen where our country seemingly is divided. But, you know, when I look at our country, I see hurt people. I see a country of hurt people that need to heal, and how do we come together and do that? And I know as athletes, we constantly put on Team USA, and when we go out there, we are one team. And every time I think about it, when I turned on the TV and saw what was going on in my country's capital, I thought back about my time I ran in Athens, because everybody who was screaming for me didn't necessarily look like me, and we were all screaming USA for me, my African-American black self, and we were all one unit and we were all one country, and that's the patriot. And what I saw was not patriotism. That's not how we've done things. That's not how we do things. And I just want for us as a people to represent who we are. And what's great about our country is that we are a mix of amazing, beautiful people, and the depth and the core of our country come from a people who are marginalized, who are brown and black people who are marginalized. And that is where the country began, from the natives and indigenous people to all of the African-Americans, African descendants of slaves that have built and bred this country, to all the immigrants who have come and brought businesses and built and grown, and we've all come together. We are now all here, and we have to learn how do we appreciate that and keep a democracy of law that is fair and is safe in this country first here, because we have so much to offer the world, and we're so great here that we are a free enterprise country. And the fact that green money moves our country, the thing is, we have to learn how to live together as a people in peace in order for us to be successful and have our kids have awesome futures. So that's kind of what, you know, me personally took up charge and, you know, felt like it was time for me to use my platform, my degrees, to sit and be the chair and hold meetings with experts and really have deep conversation that sometimes was difficult, but we had it. And so we got to a good space, and I just hope the world sees that we're trying to lead in a good direction and do something positive.
Man, you said a lot. You have said so much, and you said that so eloquently, just about where we are right now as a nation. And one of the things that I just want to put out there, you mentioned about sports being the ultimate unifier. Again, we've seen it time and time again, and we're currently seeing it in these times right now. We saw what the NBA has done. We've seen what the NFL has done. We've seen what Major League Baseball has done. Everybody's been glued into sports to look for that common, look for that refuge, that safe haven, and definitely sports has done it, and sports will continue to do it. And you just hit it so beautifully, man. It's just not how we operate in America. You know, we're better than that. Mm-hmm. We're better than that, and we have to just, you know, grow. We're continuing to grow. America's been around for so long, and we're still growing as a people. Mm-hmm. That's one thing we're still learning. Through our flaws, through the flaws and the mistakes of our country, it's still beautiful nonetheless. But man, thank you so much. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. And as mm-hmm. you mentioned, you are also the chair of Team USA Council on Racial and Social Justice, and you're also a leadership member on the Athletes Advisory Council. And just again, just tell all our listeners, the listeners out there, in detail what you do in those positions.
So currently now, at the time, for the past 4 years, I've served on the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee's Athlete Advisory Council and served for the past 2 years in a leadership position. So there's six of us in leadership. We have a chair, and I served as one of the members in leadership as an African-American female. And so I was able to, you know, we had a really diverse committee, which was awesome. And so what we do is we represent the athlete voice. So in that space, every single Olympic and winter sports, Paralympic and Olympic winter and summer game sports are represented with two athletes there. And we come together and talk about the issues of the U.S. athletes, all of them. And so it was a beautiful thing to be immersed in a space representing a minority group of individual and athletes, and to really have earnest conversation and to learn that the Team USA athlete, when we talk about Team USA, we are connected and we are committed. And the one thing that I learned about the athletes is that we may not all agree with each other about things, but we all respect each other's decision and stand by each other, no matter what. That was the most beautiful thing I've seen, and I learned that by being the chair of the council. So when Team USA decided to have the discussions with us and ask us what we wanted and what we needed, I had a personal conversation with our CEO, Sarah Hirschland, and I commend her leadership and her strength as a woman to lead, even when it seemed like it may not look like the popular thing. Because as you said, the NBA and the NFL, you know, it's what's right. And so I thought it was important that as Team USA athletes representing all sports, that we take up the matter and we listen to athletes' voice, and they heard us. So they created a council that has been athlete-led, and I am the chair of the council, and it's led by athletes. And the council, we've broken up into four different steering committees. The first one was taking up the protests and demonstrations and dealing with Rule 50. We've now transitioned. Earlier today, I was preparing for our Zoom call because we're about to start the second bucket, which is athlete voice and advocacy, and really dive into Team USA athletes, what athlete voice and advocacy looks like, really at the depths of sport in America, you know, at the NCAA level, at the youth level, you know, how do we protect athlete rights and athlete voice and, you know, really hear them and allow the athlete to lead, because the U.S. athlete, that's great, or the U.S. athlete that gets out there and commits is not just an athlete. There's a person with a story and a journey that we can all learn from in the Olympic and Paralympic space. And so the other two buckets were institutional change, looking at the USOPC within itself and the Paralympic movement within itself in-house and how we need to be better, and all of the NGBs and governing bodies and how they can be better. And then the last one was really tackling racism and discrimination that's happening in fields of play, happening within, you know, officials, so we can really you know, be leaders and be thought in, leaders and innovators in how we can be better as a country and as a nation, particularly so we can be a better example before we kind of, you know, put our thoughts on other people. You know, let's really kind of start taking care of home. And I thought, you know, this council was a good space that the athletes can take charge of our space and maybe lead our country and our people in a conversation about how we can best as a nation.
That is awesome. One more thing I wanted to point out. You mentioned that, you know, for so long America has cared about one color, and that's green. And we know that America has been for so long a capitalistic society. Do you think capitalism has really hurt America, or has it really helped it? And if it has hurt, what do you think would solutions be to take down this giant called capitalism?
You know what? I think I love the beauty of free enterprise. I love the idea that I can come up with an idea, start selling it, and become a billionaire. I love that. I wouldn't change that. Where we've missed the mark is we have not respected that the green dollar goes in all kind of colors' hands. All kind of colors in America spend the green dollar. And when you lack diversity and you lack inclusion, you lack growth in revenue for that reason. And that's what's been missed. So whenever you have any racism, wherever there's microaggression, wherever you lack diversity, wherever you don't include the black man, the black woman, the Latino man, the Latino woman, the Asian male, Asian woman, in a world of like America, as the way we are set up, you are really not going to increase the ceiling. You're keeping your bottom line right where it is. You're going to probably stay more in the red. And I say that because when we look at expenditure, particularly in the United States, and you know, this is just fact. Black Americans, and we should be making more. We don't. We should. But even in what we make the least, and we still spend the most. And I say this to a lot of companies when I don't receive quality customer service, because if you respected, if people would call themselves patriots and respected the capitalist free enterprise opportunities that we have, you would respect everybody who walks into your store. You would respect everyone who comes in and looks at your product or goes online, and you will offer them wonderful customer service to get what they spend, which is green money. And that's what is missed. That's what's missed in the opportunity of a free enterprise country, the lack of inclusion, the lack of diversity, the lack of acceptance, the bigotry, the microaggression, making people feel set aside. People will spend what they feel include. If nothing else, because we are a free enterprise country. So, you know, that's my response to that, because I know that's what it is. That's what you see, you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You've hit it right on the mark right there. And you've heard it from us. She is Mushami Robinson, Olympic gold medalist in track and field from the 2004 Summer Olympics, a member of the 4x400-meter relay team, and doing amazing things. Not just in athletics, but even more importantly, doing her thing in the world of education and also in the fight for social and racial justice. Now, Mushami, thank you again. Before we let you go, where can they find you on social media? And if you have a website, let them know that as well.
So on Instagram, my Instagram and Twitter handle is at Miss MS. Mushami, my first name, and I'm on Facebook, but I think that's probably a maxed out feature. But on my social media, I'm going to be more vocal, and there's a website that we're going to put together, and it's for my fundraiser for the nonprofit I'm building for our high school students, age 13 to 17. The reason I'm coming back to race, I'm trying to create a space in every school district where our young people can come and have that conversation. And so, you know, there will be a website up, and they can just go to either one of those very soon within the actual week. I just had a meeting about it on Sunday that I'm excited that we finally got people who I finally shared this space with. I kind of kept it a little private, you know, because it means so much. But the one thing I do know is 1 million starts with one. So I took my one self and shared this idea. And, you know, I would be blessed if the world would love to bless what I'm trying to do for our young people here in the United States and hopefully globally, if that's possible. So at Miss Mushami is where they can find me, and just be on the lookout for the website and the page where you can get involved with the nonprofit and help bring it to fruition.
This was really beautiful. This was very insightful. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program.
Thank
and if
you.
Ever you want to come back on, you're welcome. If ever you want to come back on, just feel free to let us know.
Oh, I would love to be back on whenever you want me to. Reach out. I'm there. You see how you got me. I show up. I show up for good people. I show up for people because I believe that that's when the universe calls for me. I'm there. And so just thank you for the opportunity to share and particularly to tell people how they can become an Olympian. I think that was I wasn't expecting that. So thank you for allowing me to be that detailed for people who have a dream to know that it is possible and there is a way to go about it. So believe and go after it. Thank you again.
You're welcome. Anytime, I thank you again for coming out of appearing on the program. Normally, I always end the show, but I'll let you end the show. Any words of encouragement or any advice or anything you would like to tell the listeners out there, the floor is yours.
You know what? I would just like to let everyone know that when they come across things in their life that they would call adversity, just know that's the time that whoever you believe in of a higher source within yourself is when they like to prove themselves great. We are all created to be limitless. And on the other side of fear is your greatness. So just step into it. It'll be great. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you once again. And you heard it from her. She's a Mushami Robinson. She says, go out and be great. And that's what we do. We go out and be great. Thank you again. And until next time, so long, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson. You listen to The Robinson Show. And Mushami, thank you so much and have a great one.
Good night.
And, all right. You too. Bye-bye.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure looks like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
I can't button up a shirt. I can't run.
I've had to learn to swallow again.
That's the only movement that I have. And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
Had I done this, had I done that,
hell, I messed up.
Get back on your plan or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Progressive presents The Sounds of the Old World.
The year is 2019, and someone is getting up to use the bathroom at the stadium.
Excuse me? Excuse me? Oh, sorry. Excuse me? You mind if I just squeeze by here?
This has been The Sounds of the Old World.
Brought to you by Progressive, where drivers can still switch and save like it's 2019.
Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Ooh, a fondue set. Ugh, now I need to find a coupon code.
Not anymore, Susan. Capital One Shopping instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout.
Wait, instantly?
It's called shopping smart, not hard. Download Capital One Shopping to your computer for free and let it do the work for you.
Don't mind if I fondue.
Haha, that's kind of cheesy. Capital One Shopping. It's kind of genius. What's in your wallet?
Savings and available coupons vary.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope. It's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
No, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Ooh, a fondue set.
Now I need to find a coupon code.
Not anymore, Susan. Capital One Shopping instantly searches for available coupon codes and automatically applies them at checkout.
Wait, instantly?
It's called shopping smart, not hard. Download Capital One Shopping to your computer for free and let it do the work for you.
Don't mind if I fondue.
Haha, that's kind of cheesy. Capital One Shopping. It's kind of genius. What's in your wallet?
Savings and available coupons vary.
What do you want a da-da-da?
What do you want a da-da-da?
I have not a da with a da-da-da.
We could switch to Progressa da.
Oh, yeah.
We could switch to Progressa and sa.
Mm-hmm.
We could sa enough to buy some za.
Oh, yeah. Let's switch to Progressa da and get some za with the money we saw.
Yeah.
Now we know we're gonna da-da-da.
These days, nothing is normal and everything is weird. But you could still save big when you switch to Progressive. It might just be the most normal thing you da-da-da.
Quote to da at Progressive.com.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Good afternoon. Would you like to try a free sample of our double fudge brownie?
Oh, sure. Mmm, that's very good. I'll just take one more, just to be sure. Yep, still very good.
Some things never change, like never being able to take just one free sample. And Geico saving folks lots of money on their car insurance.
Mmm, is that macadamia nut I taste? Let me take one more.
Sir,
Yeah. I thought so.
15 minutes could save you 15% or more. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Is that Shakespeare?
Nope, it's Geico.
Yeah, that's Shakespeare from one of his unpublished works. Oh, it be not for awakening. Nay, giveth thou the berries. For 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Nope, it's from Geico, because they help save people money.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but Geico got it from Shakespeare.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.